The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Now, our next guest is one of the most influential figures in world football. He won multiple Premier League titles, a record number of FA Cups, and masterminded Arsenal's historic invincible season of 2003 to 2004 and a 49-match unbeaten run. I think it's fair to say that he largely changed English football's attitudes towards fitness, nutrition and coaching methods, and even towards the value of having foreign managers. He's just brought out his autobiography, My Life in Red and White. Arsene Wenger, you are very welcome to The Last Word, and thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Firstly, I'd like to ask you what you make of football as present as a largely TV event without crowds in attendance. What is that experience like for you?
Well, it looks like we realize suddenly inside our game that the supporters are a very important part of our spectacle. And if there's one good side of COVID, is that football realizes now how important the supporters are, you know, and that it looks, we play, of course, it's still better than not playing, but it's like food without salt a little bit. And so it will never, as long as we cannot get the supporters inside the stadium, I would say even especially in Great Britain, where the passion is so big during the game, you feel like an orphan, you know, that you lost somebody.
How well do you think are the players adapting to playing the games in the absence of the crowds?
Well, I think sometimes that when the team isn't well, they let it go more than before, you know. But and we see surprising scores because there's no revolt in the team when you don't feel well, because that external pressure from the fans is not there. And that's why if you look recently, that you would give it some players, sometimes the team feels a bit more sorry for itself than it was before. Because before you couldn't do that.
But on the alternative side, there are people who are saying that some players are playing with more freedom, that they are less anxious because they don't have the crowds there perhaps intimidating them. So could that be an upside for some players?
It is. I agree with you. But I must say, of my experience from the game, most of the players, 90% of the players, are excited by having full stadiums, you know, and it was always a source of motivation. And the other percentage, maybe 10%, are a bit less inhibited. But normally, if you're inhibited, you don't make a professional career, because if you're paralyzed because there are people in the stadium, you are in the wrong job.
Indeed. In the 22 years that you had at Arsenal, of course, you had two stadiums at which the Gunners played. You began at Highbury and then you had your move to the Emirates. And I know you were deeply involved in the move to the Emirates for this wonderful state-of-the-art stadium that also provided the revenue to allow you to go and purchase the best players. But how significant perhaps could it have been to Arsenal and to getting the best out of the players to move from an intimate stadium like Highbury to one where maybe the supporters weren't as obvious to the players as they had been in Highbury?
Yes, we moved from a very old-fashioned, traditional, non-globally constructed stadium, but to a new, glamorous stadium. And as you said, it was the purpose was to have more financial potential and to build a very nice stadium, what was done. But we left the soul at Highbury somewhere, because it was a soul in the stadium that is difficult to recreate. It's like you move from an old house where you have your history to a completely new built house. You know, it takes time to rebuild that. And overall, I must say, I thought I lead the club through this stage and try to pay the stadium back And I knew that the 10 years was needed to do that. Now the club is in a very strong financial position and can buy big players.
And we'll get back to where Arsenal is now later in the interview, perhaps. But in the last quarter of a century, and it is nearly a quarter of a century since you first became manager of Arsenal, what have been the biggest changes in football that you would look back on?
I would say overall, the biggest, most spectacular changes have been that the ownership has changed. It went from families who owned the club, a traditional club, who were supporters of the club, to multi-billionaire investors from all over the world. And I would say the distances between the different components of a game have become bigger. The distance between the players and the supporters. We speak about Highbury. When we arrived in before the game, we had to walk out through the crowd. Today, the bus comes and goes underground with the players. There is no contact, you know. The distances between people have become bigger. And the ownership has changed. It has become much more an economical power business. And the human side has been bit diminished in all that, and the profitability and the huge numbers, investment numbers, of course, have changed a little bit the game.
Do I detect a note of nostalgia?
Sorry,
do I detect a note of nostalgia there that you may have preferred a little bit of the way things were, even if your reputation has been as a man who not just embraced change, but led change?
I like the change, as I must say as well. There are some positive aspects in these changes. You know, the game has become more profitable. The players and all people involved earn better money. And football created many jobs. And the Premier League dominates the world today because it is the most loved league in the world and has the biggest audience in the world. So there are many positive changes to it.
Has the money made the players better?
The money never makes you better. It makes you richer. But I would say they are today a much more comfortable position after their career, you know. But it's a drama to lose at 34 years of age your passion, glory and money together. At least today, the players have a potential to lead a comfortable life and take care of their families after their career. So that is a positive side of it. After that, the champions are the champions, and money has no influence on their performance. When you play football, you don't. 90% of the players don't look at how much bonus they make. You know, it's how can they win the game? Is that what matters?
The players in the modern era strike me as being extraordinarily athletic and fit. But yet, many of the players that you would have had at Arsenal back in the late 20th century, would they also fit into the modern day criteria of what's required? Thinking of players like Patrick Vieira, Thierry Henry, Dennis Bergkamp, would they be every bit as effective and influential in the modern day game as they were back in the last century?
They would, believe me. They would, because they had, the main evolution is physical, you know, and but there were as well physical players with the physical power, and I don't think the technical level has gone up, and these players were technically masters. They would still be great players today.
I'm interested that you mentioned the technical level that they had. Is there perhaps a fear that for some players in the modern era that they are thriving on the basis of their athleticism and their stamina and speed rather than on their technical football ability?
I agree with you. And I must tell you something. When I was at the end, I still had Pires practicing with the team when needed. And he was technically still one of the top players in the squad. And that was at least 10, 12 years after the end of his career, technically was still admired by the other players.
There is one player that I want to ask you about who didn't play for you, but actually worked for you in his after playing career at Arsenal. And that's Liam Brady, who I'm sure you remember playing for Arsenal, for Juventus, Sampdoria, for the Irish team. How would Liam Brady have fitted into the Arsenal team that you managed?
He would have been the perfect left-footed player I needed, you know. So I like Liam Brady, not of course as a player, but I liked him as well as a person, because I loved to work with him. We had many, many times the same vision of the game and the same assessment of the players. And it was a golden period to work with Liam.
I want to ask you, though, what you look for when you were purchasing a player. When obviously there would be different requirements in defenders and midfielders and attackers. But what particularly would you look for in the player's physical capabilities and footballing capabilities, but also in their personality?
I would say I looked most of the time for one dominant quality. What is his strong point? And how weak are the other points that in his game, you know? And if he was good everywhere but had one dominant quality, I always thought, oh, that's something that is interesting. And then I looked, how intelligent is he in his decision making, in his in the way he connects with other players around him. And that when that was good, I always gave him a chance, because I think you make your life with one dominant quality. None of us has all the qualities, so we need just one strong quality.
But what about personality issues? Because given that you're investing vast sums of money in the purchase of a player, in a transfer fee or in the size of the contract that the player gets, how much investigation would you have done and how much store would you have put in the behaviour of the player off the pitch, in the type of person that he would be to represent Arsenal?
Well, I would say that the way a person plays football is the best revelation of his character, you know. And you are who you really are when you play football, because you get away with all your social protections and you become who you really are. So I like in England, you have a word that says the first impression is always a good one, especially if it's a bad one, you know. And so I basically think sometimes the more you watch a player, the more you're not sure about him. Because I had reports of scouts, they watched the same player 15 times. And after 15 times, I didn't know anymore when I read their report if I have to buy him or not. So I think you have to go sometimes with your gut feeling. And if you love what you see, go for it and don't come 10 times back.
How demanding is it to make decisions as in the purchase of players for vast transfer fees? How much did it come into your thinking that the money you were spending, Arsenal's money, was such a large amount that you had to get the decision right?
I must tell you something. It's the best producer of sleepless nights. You cannot find better. Because, you know, you put your club financially on the edge and that you're not sure. And to make decisions is to accept that you have to go for something where you're not sure about it. And that's never easy.
Well, who were the best players that you ever purchased for Arsenal? Is it fair to ask you that?
No, it's not unfair. You know, I bought Anelka, Henri, Vieira, plus Fabregas later, or Lep, or Rosicky. They're all great players, you know. I inherited a good squad and I bought great players. You know, let's not forget, we built the stadium with our transfer money, you know, with the money we made for football. And we paid the debt back with the money we made from our transfers. So we didn't buy well and we produced some good young players.
You changed Arsenal dramatically in the time that you were with the club. But how did you personally change and adapt over your 22 years as manager of Arsenal?
I think I became deeply in love with the club, and I embraced it even too much, because I felt guilty every time you have such a support that you cannot satisfy people as much as you would like to. And overall, I think somewhere the club did eat me as well a little bit, because I dedicated all my energy to this club and didn't take maybe the right distance anymore with the success of a club, because I identified myself completely with the future of the club, and I knew we were going through a difficult period by paying the debt back, and I wanted to make sure, having pushed the club to do that, that I go to the end of it, you know. And at the end of the day, I'm really proud today for having led the club through this period, and that today the club is in a perfect shape to compete and with huge resources.
Any of that pride, though, tinged with regret that you gave so much of yourself to Arsenal, that maybe you gave too much of yourself?
I don't know. I always said to the player, you know, you never give too much. You know, we have to live like that. When you go for something, you want to do it well. And when I signed a contract, I tried to always to give my best. And in this position, on top of that, I loved the club and what I did. So I gave as much as I could.
And your love of Arsenal is very clear from the book, My Life in Red and White. But what about life after Arsenal? Given that you had spent so much of yourself in the job, how difficult did you find it afterwards to step completely away, to use the phrase, go cold turkey almost, in leaving your addiction for Arsenal pass?
It was very difficult, honestly. It was very difficult because it was the end of a love story. And so I stayed completely away. And every day of my life, I drove to the training ground, and from one day to the next, my car stood still. And you have no social contact anymore, no purpose. And it takes time. I must say, it's not easy, but time is a good doctor.
I just wanted, the time that we have left, a few other things I want to ask you about, because I'm fascinated by the fact that you came from a region of France very much on the German border. You embraced that, whereas maybe many people of your generation in the wake of the Second World War would not have done so. You spent time also in Japan and would have maybe spent longer there if the job of Arsenal hadn't come up. And then when you went to England at Arsenal, you managed to bring in this massive international influence, and that was embraced. What do you make of the way that in England it has embraced the internationalism of football at the same time as the country has tried to separate itself from the European Union and other international influences?
Well, I think you summed it up very well, because it's a contradictory and a little bit paradoxical that foreign owners have been so much welcome. But on the other hand, England wanted to gain control again of its own decisions and of its own destiny and find back sovereignty. But in football, we have had a recent example over the weekend, you know, this sovereignty is questioned. And because that's a little bit what the internationalism and the globalism has created, is that England doesn't master completely anymore on the football front the future. And in the case that we face now, is that means basically the financial problems of the lower leagues, I think personally that it has to be sorted out and solved internally by English football, and maybe even by the help of a government.
Do you ever think, Arsene Wenger, what it would have been like if you had decided on one of the many occasions when you had the opportunity to leave Arsenal to take a job like Real Madrid? Do you ever spend any time wondering what might have been?
look, it was difficult to turn these clubs down because you will not meet many people who turn Real Madrid down twice, you know. And but on the other hand, you make your life with what you think is important for you. And at the end of the day, looking back, I think we walk on a road with our values. When we get out of this road, we are not very comfortable. And once I signed the contract, I always thought, you signed, nobody forced you to do it, go to the end of your project. And at the end of the day, I'm more proud of that than of anything else.
And it's great to be able to come towards the end of your career having that level of satisfaction. But tell us, where is your career at now? Because many people speculated that after you left Arsenal, that you might take on the job as a manager at another club. Has that possibility passed for you now?
Not really, because I'm quite fit at the moment. But I'm in another project at FIFA to develop world football, and I'm passionate about that as well. I don't rule it out to manage again, but I thought, you know, maybe I didn't stop for 36 years. And maybe the time has come where I consider a little different life for a while and to see how much I miss it. I miss the intensity of it. I don't miss everything of it, you know. So I have aspects of my life I love, but I still miss that Saturday or Sunday without a game, you know. It's not easy to take for me. But overall, life is about choices, and I've chosen now to have a different life.
We wish you the very best with it. It has been great having you with us here on The Last Word of Today FM. The book is My Life in Red and White. Arsene Wenger, thank you so much for joining us here on The Last Word.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.